Cleveland's Morning News with Wills and Snyder. Your 5 to 9 news feed on News Radio WTAM 1100.
The deal boss, Matt Granite, Channel 3's Morning News. Wills ways to say we got to keep them phones charged. And you came up with a great deal this morning on some extra battery life for us, right?
Absolutely, Bill. This is perfect for that kickoff to the holiday weekend. More importantly, for all of those times where you simply need a charge, whether you're a road warrior by the pool, by the beach. Bill, how many times a day do you think the average person needs to charge their smartphone?
Probably 2 to 3.
Yeah, that's exactly what it is, 2 to 3, which is ridiculous because all these smartphones we buy that we spend an average of $1,000 on are supposed to have 8-hour battery life. So I'm not sure how that's a thing. But the best deal that I found today is a new system, brand new to market. It's not another power bank. It's not another charger. It's something called iClever Smart ID.
Okay.
Basically what it is, Bill, it's an entire powerhouse that you fit in your pocket. This looks at the charging needs of whatever you plug into it, from iPads to smartphones, Android devices, and it'll give you on average 6 extra charges. So 6 extra days worth of battery life, 40 hours direct. You plug, you play, and you use it all weekend long.
Wow. You know, the 8 hours on a smartphone, I think if you just use it as a clock, maybe it lasts 8 hours, but as soon as you start running some apps or making some calls, I mean, that's when it just drains the battery, you know?
I agree. It's the most ridiculous thing. Our phones do everything these days but hold enough charge to make a smartphone call. One of the other great components of this portable power charger doubles as an emergency flashlight. It's an amazing deal today that I found for under $30, down from about 70 or 80.
Wow.
Won't overcharge your batteries. And Bill, it's compact. It's ready to rock. It looks at the charging needs of whatever device you have, and it does the work. More importantly than this, it's 2 times faster than a traditional wall outlet.
Check out the deal, the video. You'll see more if you go to WTAM.com. Keyword save, the deal boss, Matt Granite. Watch him on 3 this morning. Follow him on Twitter as well. Always some great savings. Matt, thanks, partner. Have a wonderful weekend, too.
You too. Awesome.
Let's hope we're booking a trip to Boston, though, when it comes to our camp.
Absolutely, right. Right.
Sports mornings, 15 and 45 past. Here's Mike Snyder.
And to do that, Bill, the Cavaliers have to take care of business tonight. And Ty Lue says even though they're back at home, you just can't go out there and say, well, we're at home.
You know, I know we play well at home, but, you know, we have to beat them. And we can't just expect coming home and for our great fans and crowd that we're going to, you know, win the game. We got to play well.
Well, LeBron, in 21 games in which his team has faced elimination in his career, he's played well. He's averaged 33.5 points a game. The big question is, how much help will he get from his friends? A Cavs win, they'll play at Boston Sunday night at 8:30. A loss, the season's over. 8:30 tip tonight, we'll have it for you right here with our complete coverage from the queue beginning at 6. For the 12th time in his career, a league record, LeBron was named All-NBA First Team. He breaks Kobe Bryant's previous mark. He joins Anthony Davis, Damian Lillard, Kevin Durant, and Houston's James Harden. Speaking of Harden and Durant, well, they were squaring off in Game 5 in Houston last night, Rockets and Warriors.
Harden still on the dribble, shot clock down to 6, crosses over Curry. Comes into the paint, goes to Gordon, catches, shoots a 3, got it! Eric Gordon drills another big 3!
Rockets get it done, 98-94. They lead the Warriors 3-2. Chris Paul with 18 of his 20 in the second half, but he tweaked his hamstring late in the game and is iffy for Game 6 tomorrow night at Golden State. Now some real pressure on the Warriors. Now Houston's baseball team was hitting threes, unfortunately, against the Tribe last night.
The pitch hit high and deep to center field, and this game is blown wide open. Jake Marisnyk, just up from AAA, blows it open with a 3-run homer off dead center field. And Neil Ramirez gives up an absolute missile. Astros with 3-run home runs in back-to-back innings, and it's a rout 7-2 Astros.
And they go on to win it by a score of 8-2. Charlie Morton ups his record to 7-0. Clevinger took the loss. Early Indians had an early 2-0 lead thanks to a Michael Brantley 2-run single, but that was it. And the Astros go on to win it. The series will continue tonight. Corey Kluber on the mound for the Tribe against Dallas Keuchel. 7:10 game time. Now you can hear that game at 7:10 on 100.7 WMMS. Coming up at 5:45, Ty Lue is expecting his veterans to deliver. We'll hear from the coach coming up in sports. Home of the Indians and the Cavs, Mike Snyder, News Radio, WTAM, 1100.
I believe that this is a tremendous setback for North Korea and indeed a setback for the world. Hopefully positive things will be taking place with respect to the future of North Korea. But if they don't, we are more ready than we have ever been before.
President Trump yesterday saying, nope, we're not going to meet. Bill Zimfer puts the story together for us this morning. So what happened and what now, Bill?
Boy, the roller coaster ride continues, Bill. How about it, huh? Early in the week, the president said there's a substantial chance the summit will not happen. Then we heard there was a good chance it will happen. And then the president called it off. Well, it turns out a bunch of things happened here. Number one, we now know for sure that North Korea did not show up for a meeting in Singapore earlier this month with White House officials to try to work on this, then reneged on a promise to allow international inspectors to observe that test site demolition this week. Only journalists were allowed in, but of course they don't have the expertise to really determine if everything was destroyed the way it should have. And then we had some comments from North Korea about Vice President Mike Pence calling him a political dummy when he mentioned Libya once again. I really think, Bill, this came down to a situation where the president was in a no-win situation. North Korea said it was Trump's choice. It was either talks or nuclear showdown. Well, the president, if he says, well, let's go ahead with the talks, it looks like he backed down to North Korea. And on the other side, nuclear showdown, you're talking about war here. So the president was in a no-win situation, had to make the move he did. North Korea now says, Bill, that, hey, we're still willing to meet. Their foreign minister said the Trump decision runs counter to the global community's wishes, but they are ready to talk at any time, in any form. So, yeah, this is really an amusement park ride we got going here.
And finally, the other part of this triangle, Bill, South Korea. I mean, there were many that were thinking this was going to be historic and they could maybe get this thing done this time, you know?
Yeah, and they were not informed about this letter that was sent beforehand, so they said they were perplexed by the decision. They called an emergency meeting in the middle of the night, President Moon, and they are still hopeful that things can get done here. They are pushing hard, once again, to get this summit, maybe not June 12, but they want to get it on the schedule.
All right, Bill Zimfer on North Korea this morning. Bill, thanks. Have a good weekend, too, bud.
You too, Bill. Thanks.
News Radio, WTAM, 1100. This is Bill Wills. Air Travel, our guy is Rick Cini, founder, CEO at FareCompared.com. Hi, Rick.
Hey, good morning, Bill.
Okay, look, Memorial Day, the unofficial, official start of summertime and travel. Through the winter, we worry about a lot of big storms. But I think I have seen studies and reports that through the summer, air travel can be just as tricky at times, right?
It actually is worse in the wintertime. Just out of statistics the last 6 years, between 10 and 15% wintertime flights are delayed and canceled. That number jumps up between 15 and 20%, depending on which year you look at in the last 5 or 6 years. And a lot of that has to do with summer storms, especially in the Chicago area and in the northeastern corridor around Newark and LaGuardia, JFK. They happen quite a bit, and they can really gum up the rest of the nation as the domino effect of people having to miss their flights makes it all the way out to the West Coast.
Yeah, I mean, there are some days you can see that line will of storms, Dallas all the way up to Chicago, so you know they got problems, and then Atlanta's only a couple hours away from that line, you know?
No, it happens a bit, and that means you need to be really prepared. One in five of us is going to have an issue with a delayed flight, and I will caution everybody that if you do sign up for flight status alerts, which I do recommend that you do to get great information about when your flight's being delayed, be careful. If it says your flight's delayed 2 or 3 hours and then you don't go to the airport, you can actually have your flight undelayed, and then you'll be on the hook for your ticket if you miss your flight. So you still have to go at the same time, either that or you have to call and make some changes to your particular reservation. If it's canceled, clearly that's going to be an issue. If it's delayed or heavily delayed, you can call and actually maybe potentially change the time the next day or get them to do something with your ticket. But don't go later and then find out that your flight actually took off and then you're sitting there with your $400 ticket and you have no recourse at that point.
Rick Seney at faircompare.com. I'm going to ask you about some summer travel prices and Europe and all in just a second. But, you know, just on that travel tip thing, Rick, for frequent travelers, and there are people that are in the air every day that are listening, but then there's others like me, maybe only travel once, twice a year. It's a great reminder, especially if you're traveling this summer with the family, on your phone, if you're flying Delta, have that Delta app on there. I mean, I got off a flight going through Atlanta. I had no idea the gate. And then I looked on my phone. Sure enough, it popped up, and before I could even call or go to another line or look up at the screen, it was in the palm of my hand.
Yeah, absolutely. Even if you don't actually achieve elite status, you should sign up. And if you don't do a credit card for points, go ahead and sign up for an account for the airlines that you're in. Get their native app. They have push status. There's third parties like Flight Stats that also have those flight status alerts as well. So it's one of the most handy features. You're essentially getting as good a quality information as the gate agent is in some cases. And sometimes it was funny. I was actually, my flight was delayed. I got a message. You could see the 20 people that had the app because they all started heading to the other gate. And everybody else was standing there. And essentially we became the gate agents and yeah, they're changing the gate.
Follow the one with the smartphone. All right. Hey, summer deals, anything getting out of here? Maybe Europe even? What are you seeing?
Yeah, if you're heading out to Europe, you definitely need to be shopping for your ticket now. I expect oil prices to continue to rise a bit. Airlines are going to try to push those fuel increases into those surcharges. Definitely some good deals. Your best bets are Ireland, Germany, and Spain for the cheapest. Of course, the most expensive, London, Paris, Rome, as you might expect. If you're heading in the U.S., some nice nonstop flights late in the summer, typically Tuesday, Wednesday, Saturday departures. Los Angeles, Las Vegas, Phoenix, all under $300 round trip. Pretty good deals. Another $100 if you want to go to Northern California or head up to places like Portland and Seattle. So those are good deals. You need to be shopping now for really departures through early August. If you're going late in August, wait another week or so before you start buying.
Rick Seney, he is the best. He is at faircompare.com with travel tips. Thanks, Rick.
Hey, thanks, Bill.
Meanwhile, news we're following. President Trump today gets a briefing on the possibility of Russian interference in the election. Michael Bauer's on that story this morning. Michael, good morning. Who's telling him, and what are they likely to tell him?
Well, what we had is we had a situation where you had two big meetings yesterday between these intelligence meetings that were set to give away this incredible amount of classified information, Bill, and you're having President Trump at the helm of both of them. You're originally supposed to have this meeting that involved no Democrats whatsoever, and then that altered into a second meeting that was a party, the Gang of Eight, so you had a bipartisan kind of a meeting as well. In both of these cases, it seems like there wasn't any discrepancy in the intel given, but with that, you might recall to ease concerns that these meetings weren't just merely a fishing expedition to help Trump discredit the Mueller investigation. Sarah Sanders reported on Tuesday that no one from the White House would be attending the meeting with Nunes. That was flat out untrue. Yesterday, White House attorney Emmett Flood attended the meeting with Nunes. Giuliani saying the president personally wanted Emmett there and that they were there for as much openness as possible under the law, which caused some face-to-face discrepancies with Democrats, including Senator Mark Warner, who said that there was no business having that lawyer or, for that matter, Kelly show up there to a classified intelligence briefing. They're not supposed to be there whatsoever. So there were some problems at the start from that.
Okay, it's classified. There were enough people there. There had to be some leaks. I mean, this thing's going to eventually come out as to what was shared, right?
There's a very good possibility that nothing has come out that we can tell as of late. In fact, there's been sort of a silence is deafening element to this. You've seen the reaction from the Democrats and Adam Schiff saying that nothing we heard yesterday changed our view that there was no evidence to support any of the Spygate stuff the president was talking about. And then there wasn't really anything at all from the Republicans until Mitch McConnell went on Fox News to say that there was, quote, nothing really surprising in this classified briefing whatsoever. So it's almost as if this just is coming across to all of the people involved here, minus the president, who refers to it as Spygate still, that this was just a run-of-the-mill, everyday FBI investigation.
And Michael Bauer on it. Have a great weekend.
You too. Enjoy, Bill.
Thank you.
Everything it takes to win.
Sports columnist, Plain Dealer, 31 different books, including The Comeback, LeBron, The Cavs, and Cleveland. Terry Puto, Cleveland Plain Dealer, Cleveland.com. On Cleveland's Morning News with Wills and Snyder on the morning of Game 6. Terry, good morning. How you feeling? What do you think tonight?
I think there'll be a game seven. How's that?
I like that so far. That's a good opening answer, Mike Snyder. Good answer. I like that. You can be on longer, Terry.
Well, it's really like they have two consecutive game sevens if they win. But I just maybe I'm wrong, but I don't think LeBron's going to go out at home losing in game six. And whether it's for this season or forever, either way, I think he forces a game seven. Now, that could be a whole other deal in Boston, but I'm certainly – hopeful of that, because I just think if you keep putting pressure on Boston, maybe they will finally break.
Well, they haven't come close to putting any pressure on them in Boston, really. But
that's for sure.
But at home, Terry, in the two games they've won, they had big leads after the first quarter. The supporting cast has played much better here. It's just been – they've been invisible in Boston. I mean, George Hill, J.R. Smith have done nothing in Boston. Terry, it's like they're not even there.
Yes, I have those stats in the paper. I mean, it's embarrassing. It's something like between them, it's like 17 points in, you know, 9,000 minutes. I'll not even get into it. And the embarrassing part, too, is between those two guys, they have played over 200 postseason games in their career. I mean, this is not some of those kids the Celtics have trying to figure out, you know, home, road, playoffs. These guys have done it for a long time. And they've got nothing. You know, Kevin Love's been fairly consistent, home or away, for the most part for the Cavs, but those guys haven't. And so we'll see. I mean, LeBron clearly was tired. You know, he's played far too many minutes this year. It wasn't just playing all 82 games, Mike. Is he averaged more minutes per game than anyone else also?
And he's way over anybody else in the playoffs. Oh. The thing about it is, Terry, too, when you look at the Cavs right now, they don't have another guard that can really create his own. So LeBron is either scoring or doing the creating for everybody else. And those are hard minutes, too.
Yes, they always are in the playoffs. I did watch, for example, last night, Houston and Golden State, and by now even Golden State's vaunted ball movement is broken down some, and you had a lot of one-on-one with Durant on one end and either Harden or Chris Paul on the other, and it gets that way deeper in the playoffs. And of course what happens is a lot of these games turn ugly. You know, never forget game 7 2016 final score 93-89. At one point in the fourth quarter, 12 consecutive shots are missed. You know, it does become a little bit of a test of wills.
It really does. And you mentioned that other series, the two high-scoring teams, yeah. Houston and Golden State, neither one has cracked 100 in the last two games. Back to the Cavs, and tonight, Ty Lue, even revealing that he kind of messed up with a Korver substitution.
What is that about, by the way?
Yes, Semi Ojeleye, where did that come from?
That is inexcusable. It really is. You want to put Kyle Korver in the game, you know what you do? I know it's hard. You put him in the game.
Yeah, it was
like Hugh Jackson. You want to run the ball, you know what you do. You run the ball.
Now, you look at Boston. Now, they've made that move going with the big guy, Baines. What do you think the Cavs do to try to counter that tonight, now that they kind of at least they know how it's going to begin or likely to begin?
Well, that's when – actually, you saw he brought Larry Nance in a little later on in that game, and Nance gave him some spark. Remember, he got knocked down by Morris and pushed back. I was surprised, actually, Stevens didn't go to that a little earlier just to get more physical, because the way these series go now, getting rebounds and that kind of stuff matters. I believe in this series, the team that's gotten the most rebounds has won whatever game it is. So, in other words, Boston's also out-rebounded the Cavs in three of the five games. And so that's a key part, too, because, you know, the old thing, extra possessions are keeping the other team from getting extra possessions. But you could tell both teams are feeling it. How many missed layups have been in the last few games?
Terry Pluto, Cleveland Plain Dealer, Cleveland.com. Follow him on Twitter. Game 6 tonight. Thanks, Terry.
Take care, guys.
Old Tribe coverage every Friday. Andre Knott, Fox Sports, Sports Time Ohio. Normally see him on from the dugout when players are throwing stuff at him. Every Friday, though, he checks in with us to talk a little Tribe. Bill Wills, Mike Snyder alongside. Andre Knott brought to you by AAA Advanced Plumbing. Morning, pal.
Good morning. How you boys doing?
By the way, kids look like they enjoyed Chicago.
Yes, the kids enjoy Chicago big time. They love it. They love the big building.
Follow Andre on Instagram. He had some great pics of the kids. Did they get out to the pier? Was it the Navy Pier thing?
We didn't get out to the pier, but we got to the zoo. We got out to the aquarium. We got to a lot of places over the last 3-4 days.
Chicago's a fun town to go to, really.
Oh, it's a great place. Yeah. Yeah.
Then you get over to Wrigleyville. Always a good time. And especially when they win both games there, right?
Yeah. No kidding. You know, Wrigleyville's changing so much, though. It has a lot of the old appeal, but they've built hotels and condos and all kinds of buildings, and their clubhouse looks like something that's, out of the, it's a different place than it was just a couple of years ago, to say the least.
Well, as Bill mentioned, Andre, the Tribe sweeps the Cubs, and now Houston in town. They get the game one of the series last night. This is an interesting stretch for the Tribe right now, as they're still trying, I think, to take off as they sit here at 24-24. What are your thoughts on what you're seeing?
No, it is an interesting time, just the schedule and who they've played and how they've played. The thing is, for the most part, the games in Houston last weekend, I thought they were good baseball games, even though the Tribe, won one out of three. But you can just tell when Houston goes to their bullpen and the names and the numbers and the arms they have, there's a big difference in what, they're going to compared to what the Indians are going to. And you can even say the same thing about the Cubs. It's pretty obvious, though, after stocking up their bullpen 2 years ago, 3 years ago, the Indians are probably a guy or two short compared to the other teams that they're competing against, and they're treading water, I guess is the best way to look at it. And over the last two seasons, we've seen this with the Indians, but you don't want to sit here and say, they'll get hot again like they did, previous years. But I think it's pretty obvious that they're a guy short.
And they have the luxury right now of being in the Central Division, and certainly this is not a time you see teams making trades, though, Dre, right? This is not the time of year.
No, you're right. This is the time of the year where you kind of got to see what you have from within. But I think over the next month and a half, 2 months, it'll be interesting to see what they can and they won't be able to do. The one good thing is that there are probably about 4 or 5 teams that already know that they're out of it. But you're probably going to have to wait till the end of July to find whoever could help them. And I think that's why you will look at guys like Neil Ramirez and different guys like that. This is an opportunity for them to make a chance for themselves. And they have to take advantage of it.
And the other thing that's been going on is the Indians have as many outfielders on the DL as they have in the outfield.
Yeah, it's amazing. I think four guys are out right now, and I think they're going to run into problems in just trying to get them all back. Not to get them all back, but just get them playing with the different minor league teams, because it looks like Chisenhall's going to play today and tomorrow. Guyer should be able to play pretty soon. Zimmer's going to go out on Saturday. It's going to be tough, but it's going to, and what happens when they all get healthy is really the other thing to pay attention to.
Go ahead.
Yeah, and Naquin, too, is getting close, right?
Yeah, and Naquin is going to go out. He's going to go out probably in the next 5 days as well. So it'll be interesting with Melky Cabrera here, who will play and who will not play when they're all healthy.
Speaking of Melky, what's your take on him?
Professional hitter.
Yeah.
Professional hitter that can hit from both sides. And I think, Bill, and I think the one thing that Tito wanted after losing Santana was somebody to help balance the lineup out with all the lefties. So I think that's what he is. He's a guy that can hit in the middle of the lineup, and he can on both sides, and that's what Tito needed.
Corey Kluber tonight, 7-2 at ERAs, just above 2, isn't it? 2-3-6,
yeah,
I think. Yeah.
Look at all the ERAs. These pitching matchups this weekend look like a playoff series, not a series in late May. And I think the player, Corey said to me, he goes, we know that when we're going against this team, the mistakes are going to have to be at the minimum. And Corey told me yesterday, he goes, I think that's what we need right now to play in a type of series where we know every pitch means something on both sides of the ball, both sides of whether we're up or not up.
7:10, first pitch, 100.7. WMMS will have it. Fox Sports, course on TV. Andre from the dugout. Pal, thanks. Have a great weekend.
You guys, too. Take care. Happy Memorial Day to everybody.
And to you, my friend. Sugardale Dollar Dog Night tonight and the Songs of Summer Fireworks Show.
Nibbling on sponge cake.
My buddy Jim Falk, who puts together the song list for the fireworks. With Jimmy Buffett's Sunday Night at Blossom, I'm thinking Falky will play a little Buffett during.
There you go.
Can you see the fireworks?
Yes,
and
yes. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah,
the summer. Tonight?
Strumming my six string.
Get your tickets, Indians.com. Saturday is Terry Francona 88 jersey giveaway, courtesy of Sugardale. And Monday, Corey Kluber bobblehead. That's a 4:10 first pitch on Monday.
Wasting away again in my
radio, WTAM 1100. This is Bill Wills. Big, big movie for the weekend. Finally, it's Solo, a Star Wars story. Kevin Carr, FatGuysTheMovies.com. Okay, he was always kind of a shady background, it would seem. What can you tell us? Spoiler alert, just be ready. What'd you think?
Well, This is a little bit different than the other Star Wars movies we've seen, actually, really ever. The closest you got was something like Rogue One, which gives, that's the Star Wars story moniker. It gives a background of something that we knew was going on, but we've only heard referenced in the movies. And the Lucasfilm has sort of taken a nod from the original Extended Universe stuff, where you had back in the day in the 80s and 90s, and even into the early 2000s, you had books and you had comic books and role playing games that fleshed out either stories or characters or things that were referenced in the main movies. This one just tells the story of Han Solo, kind of how he got to where he was, where he starts off as a petty criminal and then goes through, you know, a little bit of work with the Empire, and eventually becomes a intergalactic outlaw, or just a galactic outlaw, I guess you could say. It's different because it's not about the Skywalkers and it's not about the Jedi. It's really just about Han Solo. And you get some other characters you've seen before. Of course, Chewbacca shows up. You know, it's always, any movie's made better with Chewbacca, in my opinion.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, and you've got Donald Glover as Lando Calrissian. You've got Woody Harrelson as basically Han Solo's mentor as he goes into sort of his outlaw profession. And it's Alden Ehrenreich who plays the young Han Solo, and he really does embody that sort of scoundrel swagger that a young Harrison Ford had. Now, like I said, it's not meant to be the beginning and the end of the universe. It's not meant to be this groundbreaking piece in the ongoing saga. It talks about, you know, stuff like the Kessel Run and the spice mines and the Corellian battle cruisers where they build all these ships. You get to see these things kind of for the first time in a Star Wars movie and in a different context. And it's meant to be sort of just this one-off movie that's fun and entertaining and kind of brings Star Wars back to the summer releases without trying to, you know, break brand new ground in the Jedi saga. And for that, I loved it. I thought it was a lot of fun, and it was a great time at the movies.
Kevin Carr, FatGuysTheMovies.com, Solo, A Star Wars Story. There was noise around this. Ron Howard got involved. Can you tell he directed the thing?
Yeah, well, I mean, he's not like a filmmaker that has such a style that he likes overpowering somebody like, you know, like Wes Anderson. But he did a great job. In fact, he was originally courted to do Episode One, by Lucas himself. But, you know, Ron Howard said, that might be a little bit too much to do at this point in my career.
Yeah.
And so he picked it up over, I think it was Phil Lord and Chris Miller who were doing it, and I think they were probably pushing it more to a comedy. And this certainly does have comedic elements to it, but I think they wanted to have a little bit more of a serious tone, even though it's very much a whimsically entertaining film. I think Howard did a good job with it. I have no complaints on what he did from a director's perspective.
Solo, A Star Wars Story. Can't wait to see it. Kevin Carr, FatGuysTheMovies.com. Thanks, Kevin.
All right, we'll talk to you later.
All right, morning of Game 6. It's complete Cavaliers coverage on News Radio, WTAM 1100. Bill Wills, Mike Snyder alongside the man. Jim Jones joined us. Your morning Cavs update brought to you by Huntington, one of bank that believes in looking out for its customers. Welcome to Huntington. Jim, good morning.
Good morning, guys.
Okay, yesterday I was playing some golf with a lot of Cavs fans. I mean, that was the topic, the Cavaliers. Game 6 tonight. Jim, with my heart and my mind, I want to say we're at home, we got LeBron James, so we go back to Boston. Now, the problem is what I've seen lately, I don't know that LeBron's got enough help to get us back to Boston. How do you feel this morning?
Well, I just felt like the last 8 minutes of that game, I saw two tired teams. And we mentioned it on air, and I think the advantage the Celtics had is that they were at home. That was the only way that they could come through and win that game. We'll be at home. We'll have our fans behind us. But Ty Lue said something interesting in his post-game comments. He said, you know what? He said, we just have to figure out how badly do we want to play a seventh game. You know, it's not even play the sixth game to get to the seventh game. He said the added and I get his drift, the added motivation for winning a sixth game, which is a closeout game, and you're at home, is that how badly do you want to play a seventh game? How badly do you want to go back to Boston and give yourself a chance to win that game? And I think that's where we are right now. You know, I think we can do it. I know we'll win at home. I'm very confident we'll win the game here. Boston seemed to think, Morris made a comment right after the game, Then he said, "Well, you know, we want to end it. You know, like they're really running over us. We're going to win the game. You know, we want to end it in Cleveland." It's not like that. These two teams are very good on their own court, and we're very good at home also.
Yeah, Jim, the averages per game are very close, but although we've not had a real close game down to the final minutes, wanted to get your thoughts on the move the Celtics made starting Baines. It did seem to affect Tristan, who'd been great in games 2, 3, and 4. He was not much of a factor the other night. Your thoughts on dealing with the big guy joining their starting lineup, Baines?
Yeah, I don't think it was so much Tristan as it was. But this is what happens when Horford and Baines are in the game together during the regular season. They're the best defensive tandem in the league. They only give up 95 points per 100 possessions. They're very good because they work like a rubber band, you know, because they have the athletic young kids pressuring people, forcing the ball handlers to drive. But they've always got a big in the paint to protect paint and also protect the rim. So it works very well for them defensively. But I thought the biggest thing was they had Marcus Smart coming off the bench, whose offense is on and sometimes it's off. But when you put Morris coming off the bench, and he's a big player who can play three positions, and he can score, I just thought it gave them some added scoring off the bench that they hadn't had in the previous games. And I thought that was the turning point.
Jim, when we look at tonight, and as you, I think, kind of put it accurately, how badly do these guys, the Cavs, want to go back to Boston for a chance at a Game 7 with a chance to go to the NBA Finals? In the two home games, the Cavs have jumped on Boston, really won the games, I think, in the first quarter. Even the last game that was here, Boston actually got back into it. The Cavs had some turnover problems. It got a little closer than it probably should have. But that first quarter will tell us a lot tonight, won't it?
It will, Mike, and we have to minimize turnovers. We've been just a turnover machine. You know, we've been our own worst enemies, bad decisions, trying to force balls in, and even LeBron, you know, trying to force stuff into JR in the paint with two guys on him. It just doesn't work. You know, the most efficient passers are the passers who are scoring threat first. And I just thought LeBron had gotten into this passing thing, and it was very obvious he was looking to pass before he scored, and I thought it played right into the Celtics' defense, and they were more concerned about closing the passing lanes, got a lot of turnovers. You know, they were out and playing in space with their athletic young kids. I just thought that hurt us really badly.
Jim Jones, I'll leave you with this. I just looked at Boston. Chilly, rainy Sunday, and 59, so take a jacket with you for the walk-in, okay, buddy?
I hear you guys.
Let's think that way. Thanks, Jim.
You're welcome.
Mike Snyder, alongside Emmy award-winning Fox Sports personality, former Major League pitcher, and scratch golfer Jensen Lewis on the hotline. Morning, pal.
Hey, good morning, gentlemen.
Listening last night, I thought early on we were going to get to Houston, and Clevinger looked good and just kind of got away from us with that loss.
Yeah, it did. And honestly, Wilsey, it's been kind of the theme for Clev in the games that don't go his way this year. I kind of dropped a little Gloria Stefan on the pregame show and said rhythm's going to get you. And I think for Clev, it's always been about rhythm for him for three or four batters that he just loses it. And that's ultimately when the opposition is able to get to him. So you look at really one bad pitch last night and it cost him three runs. But you go even before that, it was predicated on hitting Tony Kemp, the number 9 hitter, on an 0-2 pitch with two outs. And that prolonged the inning to allow Bregman to get to the plate a couple of batters later. So other than that, yeah, still the big problem is these middle relievers. They just cannot keep the game close enough for this offense, who is leading the major leagues and runs in the month of May, to have a shot to come back. You're at 4 or 5 run deficits. It's just too much to overcome.
And Jensen, right now, looks like they're going to keep getting their chances to try to figure it out. We're a little early in the season for the team to really go out and make any moves, aren't we?
Yeah, no question about it, Snides. And that's probably the biggest frustration with Indians fans is, hey, we want to see some success from these guys, no question about it. But it seems like you've got 2 months of auditions here that have gone by the wayside. We know Miller and Allen are going to be fine, and Miller is on the mend here. But I think you look at one or two additional arms that they're going to have to go get. And that's really it. That's going to be able to cover up a lot of issues for this team because the rotation is one of the best besides Houston in the entire American League.
And fortunately, we are in the right division that we can be patient, right?
And no question. And you get done with Houston this weekend, Snides, and then you start, I think, about 20 games against the Central. You'll have the White Sox come in for the Memorial Day holiday, and then you'll go back and play Minnesota. So they've got everything right in front of them, but you're right. It is the gift that keeps on giving.
I wanted to get your thoughts on what Kevin Cash is doing with Tampa. He's going to start relievers in the next three games, and then go to starters. He said that he's not trying to be cute. It's the right way for them to try to win. What are your thoughts about that?
I guess I retired too early, Snides, because I could get some starters on my belt.
Yeah,
I understand his premise behind it, because the thought is that you give these relievers a chance to take out the top of the lineup, which is usually the best hitters, and then allow your starter to, quote-unquote, get in the groove by going through some of the lesser guys, and those are the first hitters that they would see in the second and third innings. So it's an interesting way to look at the game. It goes all the way back to when people started to shift. People didn't like it, and all of a sudden it's caught on and been something of normalcy. I think we're still at the very, very early stage of this, but with Tampa, they have to do it because they just don't have enough starting pitching to be able to counteract as a traditional rotation would.
Interesting that shift cost Houston last night on a play as far as getting the guy over. But anyway, all right. Hey, you picked the Masters. You've picked the two horse races so far. Sunday, Indy 500. You got Danica Patrick, her final run before retirement. Or do you like Ed Carpenter on the pole?
Give me the pole sitter. Give me Carpenter. I know it's not usually the chalk here, but I'll go with the pole sitter.
Jensen Lewis, TV tonight.
Yeah, we'll be on at 6:30. We'll see you live from center field.
Excellent. Fireworks after the game, songs of summer. Thank you, pal.
Thank you, guys.